Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Gentlemen, I'm Elodie Suderstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Monday, August 4th, 2014. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Hey, happy Monday to you, too. And as usual, gold is down this Monday. Seems like I can't remember one Monday where it's actually been up. But
rainy days and Mondays always get gold down.
Yep, certainly does. Gold is down 580 on the New York spot at 1289. Silver's down 13 at 20.28. Platinum looks unchanged at 1468. And palladium down 8 at $860. You have the USDX today trading, really not doing much today, 0.01. at 81.32. Crude oil is up 59 cents at 98.47. And something gave the Dow a boost here in this about this last hour or so of trading. It managed to be up 75 points at 16,569. You have the NASDAQ up 31 at 43.83 and the S&P up 13 at 19.39. And the 10-year yield is 0.01 to the downside at 2.49%. So, you know, I've been reading where there's a lot of the COMEX longs are getting out of their long positions, and but I'll tell you, week it certainly was a weak July for the purchases of gold and silver. The U.S. Mint, their log for Silver Eagles and Gold Eagles, particularly their Silver Eagles, they didn't even get over 2 million as of today. So,
and they were running it now. What was their maximum back a couple of months ago?
March, there was, I believe it was March, was 5 million.
Yeah,
and last month was the month before was 2.6, and every other one, of course, was over 3. So, I believe, if I recall correctly, I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but again, it goes to show you what the summer can do to precious metals. So, yes, we all talk about manipulation, and certainly the prices for gold and silver are lower. They're certainly holding this level due to manipulation. But if you don't have buyers, even the physical market can't hold off their manipulation. So I think summer doldrums certainly did set in for the month of July. And I certainly believe August can be a totally different month, although you have most of Europe is off. They basically shut down for August. And so we could have another trading schedule for gold and silver, as we have seen for July. And these really aren't bad prices for either gold or silver. They're still great opportunities to pick up or add to your portfolios.
You know, I have an article that was from an outfit called SRS Rockuk Report. I don't know what the name means, but they are. The title of the article is Chinese Silver Inventory is Nearly 90% Depleted at Shanghai Futures Exchange. Now, most of you have heard about the Shanghai Gold Exchange. That's what we're talking about. They sell gold and silver and other products, and they focus on taking physical delivery of the product. This is not a place where you're speculating in paper gold or paper silver, as you do on the COMEX markets and whatever commodities markets and future markets you're dealing with here in the United States. That's all about paper, all right? You can get physical gold, but mostly it's paper, and that's what's really being bid on, and the price of paper silver is whatever it is today, and the price of paper gold, that's what we see and we report. The Shanghai Gold Exchange is intended to sell gold and silver and other commodities, and you take delivery. Take delivery. If you're coming in to sell, you got to have real gold and silver to sell. Now, this idea was celebrated a few months ago, at least by people like myself, because it was assumed, I assumed, that this would establish a price for physical gold and physical silver. And that price would be much different from the price of paper gold and paper silver that we see on the markets here in the United States. But here, this report raises a different possibility. It says Chinese silver inventories are nearly 90% depleted at Shanghai Futures Exchange. In a nutshell, silver inventories declined nearly 90% from their record peak set in March of 2013. Shanghai Futures Exchange experienced a net decline of 995 million tons from March of 2013 to the end of July of this year. Now, that's over a year. That's something in the neighborhood of 15, 16 months, I don't know. But still, 995 million tons of silver were depleted out of their inventory. Now, this is interesting. I mean, this is interesting. This is, to me, this is an important insight. Chinese silver inventories grow increasingly tight as stocks at Shanghai Futures Exchange continue to fall to record lows. It is truly amazing to watch how much silver inventories declined at the Shanghai Futures Exchange since March of 2013. It's important to understand that the Shanghai Futures Exchange, as well as the Shanghai Gold Exchange, behave more as physical delivery markets than the COMEX. Now, a guy by the name of Chris Marchese, analyst at silverinvestor.com, said the most of the silver and gold contracts at COMEX were settled in cash, whereas the vast majority of contracts at the Shanghai exchanges are settled in physical metal, which is probably the reason we're seeing a huge drawdown of silver stocks at the Shanghai Futures Exchange. Well, that may be probably why it's happening, but it's not necessarily why it's happening. If the Shanghai Gold Exchange and the Shanghai Future Exchange are selling gold and silver at the prices set on COMEX, they are stupid. If they're selling physical gold and they're selling physical silver on those markets at the paper and gold, the paper gold and paper silver prices established in the United States, they're giving their gold and silver away. The only way that the Shanghai Gold Exchange and the Shanghai Future Exchange can prosper or even survive, in my opinion at least, is to let the demand for physical gold and physical silver increase the prices for those precious metals above the paper prices set by COMEX here in the United States. If the prices for physical precious metals rise in Shanghai, that price will attract whatever physical gold and silver are being sold in the world. If you're going to sell your gold, most people would rather sell it for $200 over spot than spot. And if they were paying $200 more for physical gold in Shanghai, one way or another, the gold would move in that direction. Physical gold would move in that direction. As a result, their gold and silver inventory should increase. But they're saying, no, the silver inventory has fallen by 90%. So long as the Shanghai Gold Exchange is selling physical gold and silver at COMEX prices for paper gold and paper silver, their inventories will continue to decline, perhaps until they're out of business. It's conceivable. I won't say it's true, but it's conceivable that the U.S. government, if it's already sold off all its gold out of the United States Treasury, the United States government might be secretly buying gold or silver on the Shanghai exchanges. I'm not saying that's true. That's a far-out speculation. But it's not impossible if they're selling the gold at paper gold prices. Shanghai Gold Exchange can't survive. Shanghai Futures Exchange can't survive if they continue to sell physical gold and physical silver at paper gold and paper silver prices. If they don't pay a significant premium for physical metals, the Wily Orientals are stupid, and they're going to go broke. And the reason I bring this up is because Melody's talking about how the purchase of silver eagles has fallen significantly from the U.S. Mint. Well, maybe people are going over and buying silver at the Shanghai Exchange rather than the U.S. Mint. A lot of physical silver is being purchased and taken out of the market over in Shanghai. Now, whether or not that equates, that has anything to do with the decline in sales of silver eagles at the U.S. Mint, I don't know, but it's at least an interesting coincidence, if you catch my drift.
It is a coincidence. Well, I'm not quite sure. You know, I think there's a reason why people buy silver eagles. I think when you're dealing with those, you're only dealing, you know, with bars, and those type of buyers aren't going to be the same buyers that buy silver eagles. But you don't know. But there was 1.975 million silver eagles that were sold for July.
Okay.
So yeah, I mean, there's a lot of strange things going on, and it, along with the silver fix that's going to be changed here, we'll know in 2 weeks.
Silver
week
fix dies on August 14th.
Yes. So
10 days from now.
You know, personally, I think that has. Personally, I think that has something to do. It's just something that's, you know, I think people are just being a little cautious. They don't know what's going to happen. And personally, I believe it's going to change over without a bat of an eye. I think it's just going to move from one exchange to the other. I don't think it's going to make any big difference whatsoever. But, you know, I think people, when there's something changing over 100 years.
Yeah, the silver fix, the London silver fix, is an institution that's been in place for over a century. And people just presume, we have presumed it was there for the last 100 years. People presumed it would be there for the next 100 years. And they set the price of silver for delivery in London on a daily basis, maybe twice a day, I don't know, but at least daily. And they are going to fold up their tent on August 14th. That's the last day they'll be in business. Now, it may be that the loss of the London silver fix, it's supposed to be replaced by a new entity called the London Silver Price. London Silver Fix being replaced by London Silver Price. All right? You would think, because the names are about the same, there's not going to be much difference. But I think there will be a difference, because there has to be some ulterior motive for the London Silver Fix closing its doors. They have exerted an enormous amount of power. They've had opportunity to make enormous profits running the London Silver Fix for the past 100 years. You don't close an institution like that just because somebody says, I think I want to take a vacation. They had to have a serious reason. I think the serious reason is increasing regulation, civil liability, and perhaps even criminal liability. That's my opinion. Something moved them to shut the doors. Whatever it was will still be in effect when the new London Silver Price starts up, if it starts up. And that's not even a done deal yet, and we're only 10 days away from the one closing. And we're not absolutely sure that the other one's going to go in. It might and it might not. We don't know yet. It's evidence of instability. Here's the problem. There have been some number of silver derivatives that are unknown to me. I don't know what the number is. But the derivatives have been, the derivatives are an insurance policy of sorts where, depending on how you're investing in silver, for example, you might take out a derivative where if the price of silver goes over $25, I'm going to lose on my investment. So I take out a derivative that guarantees to pay me if the price of silver goes over $25 an ounce on a certain date. All right? Likewise, I might be investing in silver in a way where if the price falls under, say, $18 an ounce, I'm going to lose money. So I get a derivative, and the derivative triggers if the price falls below $18 an ounce, I am guaranteed to get X number of dollars from the issuer, the derivative. The problem is that no one anticipated, certainly not publicly, that the London Silver Fix was going to go out of business on August 14th. The earliest we saw any reports, I saw reports on it, was June of this year. I doubt if anybody knew about it before May. I assume that there are derivatives out there that were entered into contractually before anyone knew that the London Silver Fix was going to disappear on August 14th. Now, this is critical because they signed these contracts, and the contract specified that if the price of silver goes above $25 on, let's say, September 15th, then the issuer of the derivative has to pay me X number of dollars. All right? But who says what the price is on September 15th? There are scores of markets around the world and institutions that have opinions on what the price of silver should be. So what they did in the contracts is they have, for years, they have assigned the price determination would be done by the London Silver Fix for silver derivatives. Been there 100 years, everybody figured it'd be there the next 100 years. Well, it's not going to be there the next 100 years. In fact, it's not going to be there 2 weeks from now. What? Once they disappear, who sets the price for these pre-existing derivatives and these derivative contracts? If the price can no longer be set by the London Fix because it's out of business, what is the value of those derivatives? They are no longer legally enforceable. Somebody's got to come up. The two parties to the derivatives could agree that they could set the price at the Shanghai Futures Exchange. They can set it at COMEX. They can set it at a score of different places. But unless they amend their existing contracts, the contracts become essentially voidable if anyone wants to complain because the entity that's specified to set the price no longer exists. And for me, this is the big potential danger on August 14th and thereafter. What's going to happen to those derivatives? We've heard stories for years about the massive derivatives. Some people say there could be $2 quadrillion worth of derivatives in the floating around the globe right now. I have no idea what, you know, small percentage of that is silver, tiny percentage probably are silver derivatives. Still, what if these silver derivatives, current silver derivatives, turn out to be worthless because the London Silver Fix no longer exists? What consequence may that have for the rest of the derivatives market? We're going to watch and see. We don't know the answer. I certainly don't know the answer. But it might be the big question about the loss of the London Silver Fix. We're going to take a break now for some commercials. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Everything else combined. But my parents made me read Wealth of Nations. I thought they were sadists because it's a tough read. And then, but Dad had a stack of Kiplinger magazines about economics, and he had a whole bunch of clippings. And you got a real good grip on common sense economics. A lot of times we'll talk about the debt load of a country, or that's where I got my protector, predator, parasite, producer story was out of this. And, for instance, I would read that India passes huge tariff on imported fabrics to protect their all these people at home who load fabric with their hand looms. They couldn't have any fabric factories, so imagine paying $400 or $500 for a pair of pants, work pants. And the fallout was people went hungry. But economics, real economics, is super simple. Well, can I explain world reserve currency stuff in simple terms?
Are you asking me if you have permission or if you're capable?
Yeah, I have permission. It's about 5 or 6 minutes.
You can certainly try. You can try that. Let's see if you.
How long?
Let me call Las Vegas and see what the line is on explaining world reserve currency in simple terms.
What's the line on that, Melody?
Do you know?
In 5 minutes or less.
Okay, I'll give it a shot. Okay, imagine we have a country called Banana Land, okay? The only thing they export of value are bananas. So let's say that they buy something from America using, they have their local currency, banana bucks, okay? And they trade amongst themselves with banana bucks. Let's say they buy something from an American merchant with banana bucks. Okay, what do you do with banana buck? What can you buy with banana bucks? Oh, bananas. But what if he doesn't want bananas? Okay, he has several options. He can either go to Banana Land and get something else there. Maybe if he has enough banana bucks, he could buy a place to live there. Or he could find somebody else who wants to buy bananas and sell banana bucks to this guy. Now, Okay. Years ago, a couple hundred years ago, trade was in gold and silver. But what if you lost a ship to a whoosh, gone? So then, 100 years ago, something like that, longer than that, the British Empire was around the world, and so they used the British pound sterling as a piece of paper backed up by, guess what, a pound of sterling silver. So this was a situation you could put notes on a ship, and if the ship was lost in the storm, oh, well, reissue the paper. Okay, disadvantage. That was replaced by the Federal Reserve note, okay, post-World War II. Now, here's what's going to happen. Now, when people no longer backed by gold, you all hit that every day, if not every other day. Okay, but the other issue is that we had to buy oil with it. Well, that got blown out in the early 90s by Saddam Hussein. And he sold oil in euros to so those people could eat, okay, because of our stupid sanctions, I consider acts of war. Then Iran a few years ago says, oh, we'll sell oil in rubles, rupees, yuan, yen, gold, anything you got, dollars, whatever. And that was a huge chunk. Now we have the BRICS nations. Okay, and what we're seeing is a battle between what will be gold-backed currencies, I believe that'll be the case, versus paper. We're going to see the battle of the century going on. But, okay, let's say that the Federal Reserve note is really no longer wanted or needed because our Federal Reserve, for decades, has been taking Federal Reserve notes. They said they're going to destroy, put them on pallets, they use it to pay off criminals stateside and overseas. Okay? So we have
they
all
make
these
good padding for they make good padding for mattresses and pillows,
right,
also.
But now
it's not as if they're completely worthless, you understand. They still have, and sometimes roughage for cows and pigs and goats.
Well, let him finish. He's running out of time.
Well, let me roll on this one. Okay, now, folks, here's what it boils down to. When the Federal Reserve is no longer the world reserve currency, it'll have the same problem a lot of currencies have had in the past, and this is where we're going. Okay, no longer the world reserve currency. Remember Banana Land and Banana Bucks? The only thing you could buy was bananas. After the world no longer needs Federal Reserve notes, what can you buy from America? Let's see, we export wars. We export inflation. We export a little bit of food, but we import over a third of our food. We export a few planes. Looks like they might be going to China. Folks, you have no idea what's going to happen. Get out of Federal Reserve notes because they're going to become Banana Land bucks, okay? Did I succeed?
I don't know. We'll have to call Las Vegas and see what the... Maybe we're going to have to get... That's going to require some audience feedback. You know, this is kind of like dancing with the... What is it? The American Voice or something like that? What's the audience response? I think the big question is, will the banana bucks... Are we going to see banana bucks in this country? And if so, will they be yellow rather than green?
Well, what do you think, Jim? Is the currency will be worth... The value of a currency has to do with what that country produces. Now, we artificially kept the Federal Reserve floating because of it was backed by gold. Then it was backed by oil, basically. But folks, after it's no longer the reserve currency,
by war for some period of time. If we didn't have the world's greatest military, and I mean great not as a superlative per se, but as the world's largest military. I mean, they wouldn't let us get away with pumping all our debt into foreign countries. We would have been closed down long ago. The only thing that's kept us solvent in some regards is our military, and that's declining. So what's going to hold this thing together?
I'm very familiar with that. That actually started with the Monroe Doctrine in 1823. As I said, these articles on economics were all super-duper simple. But the main idea is, yes, it has also been backed up by our military, and our militaries are to back up banksters in other countries.
True.
But now, here's the situation, folks.
Nope, here's the situation. Nope, my mistake. Excuse me. I'm looking at the clock wrong. Go ahead, Jim.
Okay. What it boils down to, this is the situation, folks. The overseas inflation is insane. I found out that from my Guatemala contact, if you have 1,000 Federal Reserve notes in that country, you got to go to three banks to try to get local currency. And then local currency, prices aren't going up so much. But insofar as Federal Reserve notes, way up, because merchants are stuck with the same dang thing. Oh, I've got all these Federal Reserve notes. What the H am I going to do with them? And now the official exchange rates between their currency and ours hasn't changed. So it looks like the dollar, so-called dollar, is not inflating. But in truth, it is inflating like mad everywhere because these merchants will price things at two things. There's a merchant. They've got all these Federal Reserve notes on these turistas. Now what do we do with them? So folks, the Federal Reserve note is going down a whole lot more than any USDX number or anything of this nature. Talk to anybody who has been overseas. And after it is no longer the reserve currency, it'll be just like the banana bucks, about the only thing you can buy with banana bucks or bananas. And what can you buy with the Federal Reserve note? So, folks, hang on. I don't know if it's going to be a flash,
What can you legally buy? What can you legally buy with Federal Reserve notes? And what I mean by that is if you go to a Federal Reserve bank, it used to be that if you were going to walk in with a dollar bill, you could trade it in for a silver dollar.
Well, I
if you
get silver
with
powder,
a 20, you have... get $20 worth of gold, you get an ounce of gold. All right? Now, the law is that if you don't want your Federal Reserve note, you take it down to a Federal Reserve bank, and you can swap it for a new Federal Reserve note. And
well,
in a sense, what we're saying is the only thing you can buy with banana bucks is more banana bucks.
Well, okay. Also, well, the last time I got any silver out of a Federal Reserve bank was in 68, and they gave you actually granules of silver for your silver certificate. So that was 68 when my dad would go to New York. But the bottom line on the Federal Reserve notes, have you noticed all the 100 C notes are pretty fresh? I think that's because they use them once and pack them onto policies to pay off criminals. Now, this is some of the stuff which I say, which I get in a lot of trouble. I'm notorious for going out on limbs. I've had a few of them snap off me hanging on. But, yeah, that's the story of the dollar, folks. It's a lot worse than any USDX numbers or any numbers coming out of any place.
Yep.
The dollar is, people are developing a carry trade where they're getting suitcases of Federal Reserve notes because they're coming out from under mattresses in the third world. People used to put them there like a stock certificate because they used to hold their value. They're coming out from under mattresses.
More valuable than the local currency.
Right.
People had more confidence in the U.S. dollar than they did in whatever currency they had in Guatemala or Honduras or other parts of the world. And they said, well, a dollar, we can rely on the dollar, or at least we can rely on it more than our local currency. That's no longer clearly the case.
Right. Now, there's actually a carry trade where people bring cases of Federal Reserve notes to some place where they can buy something of value with them, and they take them back to these third world countries. So what I'm trying to tell you, folks, is the dollar is in worse shape than we think it is. Inflation is getting nuts in the Federal Reserve notes overseas more than here. And when everybody figures out these Federal Reserve notes aren't worth anything, particularly since they flooded them with all these, as I say, all the C notes, $100 bills, they're nice and fresh. There's a reason for that. And I'll tell you, this one got me. I heard where the Federal Reserve said that North Korea was counterfeiting $100 bills. Now, it's the
so is the Federal Reserve.
Dumping them everywhere. So, folks, it's going to get a lot worse. I don't know when or where or how. I wish the Kiplinger magazine was here now today because their little short articles made everything crystal clear. And you would read about the tax load of a manufactured device. The last time I read an economics book was in the 80s. I think it was Thomas Sowell. He said a car from South Korea had, I think it was maybe a 12 or 10 or 15% tax load on it. So when it hit the docks, you're paying 12 to 15% of that car was comprised of taxes because you're paying the tax on everybody who had anything to think of the car. At that time on a car, American-made car was about 50%, something like that. And now it's definitely two-thirds across the board on everything. So, folks, the whole thing's coming down. Anything built on this many lives. Another thing, too. I read one of the articles said that whenever government reached the point where they gobbled up 50% of the resources, that government was real close to falling.
Yeah.
And anytime that the unemployment
we've been there for some time.
Whenever the unemployment rate hit close to 30, watch out. Whenever the food prices in the country hit about 50% of people's budget, watch out. So
We're approaching the magic moment when all of a sudden reality is going to intrude and it's going to have to be dealt with. And we won't be able to just keep it in abeyance, keep it back in the closet, don't look at it. Pay no attention to the little man behind the curtain. Little man behind the curtain is coming out, he's going to be exposed, and it won't be a pleasant moment for anyone.
You were talking about buying debt, Alfred. There's another thing which kind of blew my mind. I recently found out that there was some company, I can't remember who it was, where when you bought a piece of their stock and you looked into what their assets were, a third of their alleged assets were monies they had borrowed from the Federal Reserve at 2.5%. Now, when that rate goes up, that company's going down, baby. That's the only prediction I can make about that. Now, when it's going to happen?
It goes to leverage. The leverage works for you when it's going up, and it works against you when everything's going down. It makes things look brighter thanks to the Federal Reserve and cheap interest rates. You can borrow money in order to buy things that pay more, have a larger return on investment than the current interest rates. And it's driving the stock markets and a lot of investments. But this leverage is going to reverse one of these days.
Talk about
Ponzi. When it does, you're going to, it goes south. When the Ponzi scheme finally starts to fold up, it's going to fold up rapidly.
That's right? Plural, once it Ponzi starts going, schemes.
Well, it's Ponzi schemes.
Yes. We love
you.
You
say tomato, I say tomato.
We love you but guys. Ponzi. Thank you for what you're doing. Catch you next time.
Jim. All right, Jim. Thank you. Appreciate your comments. What's next, Melody?
We were talking about pension funds and so forth. Here's an interesting one. The U.S. settles with Kansas over allegations the state misled investors about the pension fund. So they came out and announced that Kansas has agreed to settle a securities fraud charge accusing the state about the financial health of its public employee pension system between 2009 and 2010. And at the time, the second worst underfunded system of its kind in the nation. Now, they get a little, they said Monday, the SEC said today that the state has consented to its cease and desist order to settle the case without admitting or denying its findings. No financial sanctions were imposed. The SEC noted Kansas has since made changes and blamed insufficient procedures and poor communication between state agencies for the problem, and which happened, of course, under the prior administration. So they failed to adequately disclose its multi-billion-dollar pension liability in bond offering documents, leaving investors with an incomplete picture of the state's finances and its ability to repay the bonds amid competing strains on the state budget. You know, it's funny, during that time frame, I mean, you couldn't pretty much go anywhere knowing that, say, hey, you don't want to touch those bonds. And, you know, all the states were failing. They all have underfunded pension, you know, and it's plus it makes
but
you wonder if it's
the fault of the government, Melody.
But it makes
this
you wonder.
Poor communications.
Also, it makes you wonder, since it was dealing with their bonds and we know that the LIBOR bond rates were rigged. And we all know that those rates came down, and a lot of your state agencies, their bonds, their muni bonds are tied to the LIBOR rate, if that had anything to, you know, any connection.
The whole thing is some sort of a bizarre scheme. Mm-hmm. And from my perspective, you trace all of this irrational and potentially dangerous scenarios that we see in the coming, that may be coming soon. What do they all trace back to? They trace back to the fundamental lie, mm-hmm, that a piece of paper is as good as an ounce of gold. That's the fundamental problem. And all the rest of this, once you accept that premise that you can use paper and digital dollars and they will work just as well as gold and silver, once you accept that lie, you set in motion a series of one thing leads to another, and we have a kind of irrational chain of dominoes. And crazy things happen, and they're going to continue to happen until it finally gets so crazy that everybody has to say, you know, this is crazy, and they quit. But it won't be restored until people recognize fundamental premise. Piece of paper is as good as an ounce of gold. It's not. I'm Alfred Addis, here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a Ku-band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Attisker with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Got an article here. I think you're all aware that there is violence erupting in Ferguson, Missouri, near St. Louis. There's something from Tyler Durden at ZeroHedge.com. The headline is, Ferguson, St. Louis violence continues. Protesters warn the revolution won't be televised. Day of protests and vigils Sunday over the death of Michael Brown, a black teenager who was killed, allegedly shot 8 times, following an altercation with a Ferguson police officer turned violent overnight with reports of riots and looting. And the violence is continuing today. As people, as the following images suggest, there's some videos here that we can't show you, of course. There was a lot more bubbling under the surface of Middle America and concern about one young man's death. As Ferguson's full SWAT team is in force. So, we have a police officer who claims that he was assaulted by one or at least one of two black teenagers, and as a result, he shot one of them. It's been admitted, I've seen one of the reports, he shot him, the police chief says, more than a couple of times, but he won't say how many times. This report says he shot him 8 times. Now, there's this, that right there, that tells us that suggests there's a problem. You know, if you have a problem and you have to shoot somebody, you have to shoot somebody. But if you have to shoot him 8 times... If that's true, we don't know that yet.
We don't know if that's true yet.
We don't know if that's true or false. So, I'm just reading from the report we have here. But 8 times suggests a reaction that was more than self-defense. It's not consistent with the idea, I'm just going to knock this guy down. It's consistent with an intent to kill. All right. Now, black folk, of course, have taken to the streets and protest. They allege that this kid is innocent. They allege that the cop is a killer. I don't know what the truth of the matter is, but I do know that if you're on the internet and you're inclined to look, it's not hard to find reports on a regular basis of another cop somewhere in the country who's killed someone under unusual circumstances.
And the cops are getting away with this because they're granted a special kind of immunity, and they get to shoot people and walk away with nothing but a wrist slap at most. And I think the public is beginning to understand that to some degree and respond to it. And we see maybe evidence of that here in Ferguson, Missouri. But is this, is the reaction we see in Ferguson, Missouri, is it a reflection of public sentiment that's had enough of police shooting people? Is that what we're seeing? Or, you know, there's a situation where whether people want to talk about it or not, the African-American community appears to welcome these kinds of an event, kinds of events at times, as an excuse to riot, as an excuse to loot stores.
I don't think they welcome that. No, I don't think it really has anything to do with that. I think the problem is much, much deeper than that, Alan. It does come back to the leadership of this country. It comes back to being divided. I believe there's more racism in this country than we've had 15, 20, 30, 40 years ago. I think that there's multiple reasons, but I don't think anyone welcomes a situation like this. I believe they're exploited. I believe there's some leaders in that group that exploit these situations. Mm-hmm. They rile people up, and that's just one situation.
Well, there's a constellation of factors that apply here, and I doubt that you can find, it's like most things, you get into a good argument and we're all convinced that when we get into an argument, I'm convinced that my argument is perfect and my premises are perfect and my conclusions are perfect, and whoever you're arguing with or I'm arguing with, they have the same conceit, they think they're perfect, and the point is very seldom are either side perfect. Same thing goes on here. Whatever's happened in Missouri, I won't argue that the police are perfect, that's for sure. And I'm not going to argue that the black rioters are perfect. I don't know what's happening here. It's, you know, in some regards, it's a little bit like what we see in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
There are tensions around. You talk about, you think there's more racism today than there was then, 15, 20 years ago. Why do you think that is, Melody? I mean, the tensions are there and they're growing. I agree with that. Why do you think there's more racism today?
I think it's been created. I mean, it's been forced. People are forced to divide. People are forced to choose sides. And whether they look at it as true racism or not remains to be seen. But I think people are forced to choose sides.
True.
We're divided. You know, it's them.
And you would think that wouldn't be true because we have a black man in the White House. We have another black man as the Attorney General of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
You would think that this is evidence that racism is ending. But the truth is, here we are in a significantly, you know, it's one of those things. How do you evaluate how much racism? It's a subjective
difficult
thing.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a subjective thing. Compare now with 20 years ago. I don't know. Can anyone really make that comparison? But part of the problem is more than a little of the racism is coming out of the black community.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
We've been led to believe and trained to believe and taught to believe that the only racists in the world are white people.
Not true.
And the truth is there's a whole bunch of blacks that are just working the game.
Yep.
They need racism as an excuse.
I agree.
And they're exploiting racism in a way that just keeps it up in the front burner. They're not going to let it die. And, you know, Martin Luther King, he made his I Have a Dream speech. And at one point he said, I have a dream that one day my little children will be judged by the content of their character rather than the color of their skin. Well, that day is here. And it's been here for some time. And there's a lot of blacks, in my opinion, who want no part of that part of Martin Luther King's dream. Martin Luther King did not say, he didn't say anything that my children would not be judged.
He said, my children will be judged on the content of their character rather than the color of their skin. There's a bunch of people who don't have much character who don't want to be judged at all. And they think of being judged as evidence of racism, and it's not. It's evidence of how much character do you have. And Martin Luther King's dream is here, and I would bet you 20-30% of people in the African-American community don't really want that part of the dream. They want to be able to walk up, hold their hand out, and say, look, I'm black, give me something. And those are the kinds of words that will antagonize and infuriate some people, but it appears to be true to me. People want to trade on the color of their skin. And if they can't have what they want, racism becomes an excuse. They say, oh, the reason I don't have a good job or I don't have a lot of money or a new Cadillac is because of racism. When really the reason might be that you just don't work hard enough to get what you want, or you don't have the capacity to work hard enough to get what you want. It's not just racism, at least not perpetrated by whites. So what you were saying, Melody, the racism is increasing. I think you're right about that, but I think part of the reason is that blacks, for whatever reason, are bound and determined not to let racism die. I see more racism among blacks than I do among whites,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I know that's a politically incorrect statement, but nevertheless, it appears to be true. And it's not a recent opinion. It's been my experience throughout much of my life. So, I don't know. What we're seeing in Ferguson, St. Louis, we've got cops that are getting away with murder. We've got rioters that are getting away with looting. And it's not so different from Israel and Gaza and Syria and Iraq. And it's part of something that's happening on a global basis right now where we are tending to civilization is kind of is imploding to some degree. And it's happening on a global scale. It's not just something that happens. It's not just something that happens, you know, just in Ferguson, Missouri. It's not just that. We see evidence of that around the world. We see it in different forms, but what has passed for civilization and some sort of order in the past is breaking down. And you look at that and you think to yourself, how do I protect myself? What do we do to restore order? Some people say, what do we need to do? We need more guns, more cops, more military on the street to restore order. I doubt that that's going to be a solution. I don't believe you can put enough cops out there to restore order. There's got to be something else happening here. And it's hard to say what it is, but it's going to require that people face our problems honestly. We're not going to be able to get out of this problem with rhetoric from the government that we're going to have a recovery or that everything's going to be wonderful or we can all sing kumbaya. Somebody's going to have to start to perceive that there are problems. We're going to have to stop falsifying the economic data on the inflation rate and the unemployment rate and whatever else rates we get out of government. Somebody's going to actually have to start telling the truth, even if that truth is painful, even if that truth tends to diminish confidence in institutions that are unworthy of our confidence. But we're going to have to start telling the truth. And when we get back and we start to get a good dose of the truth, and maybe none of us are going to like it. When we start to get that dose of the truth, then we may grudgingly fall back into a condition of civilization. Here's something from Jim Sinclair at Mindset. And he says, I do not believe there's been a period in history when geopolitical threats have been so severe or profound in their world-changing capability. The world is on fire in key areas as the White House prepares for a vacation at Martha's Vineyard. ISIS, that's the outfit, that's the Muslim invaders that we see in Iraq. ISIS is now threatening the oil-rich Kurds, who cannot stand up to ISIS
use of captured American heavy weapons. All of this can change world economics in an instant. The plunge protection team has been busy calming markets, but they cannot hide the underlying geopolitics. You know, Jim Sinclair, he's a credible source and so on, and all it is, he's just telling us things that we hear from other people who may not have as much credibility as Jim Sinclair. There is a kind of global epidemic of instability that should have everyone concerned. We don't just have a hot spot in the Ukraine or in the Middle East or in the Southwest China Sea, Southeast China Sea. It's not just China and Japan. It's not even things in Africa taking place. Europe is at least economically unstable. There's something happening here on a global basis that reminds me of the old Memorex commercial that comes to mind whenever I see these things, where someone would sing high C and the glass would begin to tremble, begin to quiver, and then all of a sudden, bang, it snaps. Right now, we're looking at a world that is like that glass in the Memorex commercial. And it's starting to quiver and it's starting to vibrate. And we don't know that it's going to snap. But it certainly could. So we see it in Ferguson. And we see it in the Middle East. And we see it in Ukraine. And, you know, China, Japan, and so on. It really does not bode well for the future. If we had one problem, or even two problems that seem significant, we could point to them and say, all right, we need to resolve this one problem or two problems. But these problems would be isolated, and we could deal with an isolated problem. Right now we're dealing with something else. We're dealing with a kind of epidemic of instability around the globe. And insofar as that's true, it simply indicates the day is coming when we're going to see that black swan event, and all of a sudden people are going to say, oh my gosh! And it's not going to be an oh my gosh moment, not really. If you've been paying attention, you could see it coming for years. If you've got a short attention span, it's an oh my gosh moment. But if you paid attention, you could see it coming for years. Got to get ready for it. Got ready for the possibility. One of the solutions, one of the things that can mitigate your exposure to that is gold and silver coin. If you believe that, give Melody a call at 1-800-375-4188. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, have a good day, and may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank the producer.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. There never seems to be a single penny left for me.